remember to be open to possibilities, open to opportunities. I have had a significant sort of opportunity to see the world, interact with people from all kinds of cultures, see agriculture from sort of the very base sort of subsistence level all the way to modern systems that we might expect to see in the US or North America, Europe. It's given me an opportunity to expand my horizons. And I think that would be the first thing, right? Don't be afraid to take a step into a new opportunity.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status to deliver higher milk yield and carcass efficiency. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Hello and welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, I'm honored to welcome a friend to the show, Dr. Jeff Dahl from the University of Florida. Dr. Dahl, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, Barry, it's great to be with you.
So I will point out, if you haven't been a longtime listener of this show, that Dr. Dahl was on for episode 39 a little while back, talking about some of his research focus. Today, we're going to focus a little bit different on sort of mentoring and career planning for students coming through. And so, Jeff, can you give us a little bit of your background, like in terms of your academic path and how you've interacted with students over the years?
Yeah, well, I'll go back a little further than that, right? How I got into this. I grew up on a small dairy in Massachusetts and was able to get my bachelor's degree at the University of Massachusetts. Like many people, I went to the sort of state land-grant school. That was the affordable opportunity for me. Got interested in research while I was there and was encouraged to apply for graduate school. Did a master's degree at Virginia Tech in dairy science and then moved on to a PhD, as you know, at Michigan State University. After that, I transitioned to working in a med school a little bit down the road in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan and was there for 3 years. Another great experience. And I would sort of, as one of the first things I'd encourage people to do is not be sort of so narrow in their ideas about where they might go academically. Lots of opportunities out there to have a great career in sort of even areas that might be just sort of aligned with, but not directly related to agricultural research, that type of thing. But from there, I went to a position at the University of Maryland, where I was doing research and teaching. Also served as undergraduate coordinator for 4 years, and then moved to an extension research position at the University of Illinois. From there, I came to the University of Florida, was department chair for 12 years in animal sciences, and had a great experience, opportunity to hire a lot of people, hire a lot of new faculty, saw them sort of develop their programs, which was really rewarding from my perspective as an administrator. And then after 12 years, that was enough, and stepped back to a faculty role. And I currently have a research role for the most part, but also I'm the director of the United States Agency for International Development Livestock Systems Innovation Lab, which is one of the Feed the Future innovation labs that is trying to address hunger and poverty in a lot of countries around the world where those are persistent issues. And the focus with that lab in particular is on allowing for greater access to animal source foods to vulnerable groups. That includes pregnant women, lactating women, and kids under two, because we know that those are the sort of folks that have the highest need for some of the nutrients that we only get from animal source foods. So they're our focal group.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Been a part of all the missions of a land-grant university. You're heavily involved in research. You, even if you're not officially in an extension right now, you speak at a lot of conferences, you interact with farms a lot, and you're interacting with international producers and then the teaching side and advising as well. So I think it's interesting maybe if we start with kind of talking through what an animal science department might have felt or looked like in the 80s or 90s, like what kind of students were coming in? What were the goals in training students and putting them out towards jobs?
Yeah, I'm glad you only went back to the 80s, Barry. That's great. didn't age me too much further back. Yeah, I think that we've kind of, it's probably been not too dissimilar to what we see now. We have a heavy population of students coming in that are interested in a pre-veterinary school track. And they pick animal sciences, dairy science, perhaps, if that option is available to them, with an eye towards going into veterinary medicine, applying to vet school, and having a career as a veterinarian. And most of our students are from a suburban background or an urban background. They would not, to the same extent that it would have been when even when I was an undergrad, have experience with or come from a rural background or a farm background and have experience with livestock. You know, right. they have experience with pets at home, would have perhaps some exposure to horses. But for the most part, we don't get a lot of people that have had sort of that production level experience in our departments now, and I don't think we had as much of it then. Certainly that's the transition that I've seen. It's just there's less and less of that. I would also say from a demographic standpoint that typically it's 85 to 90% female students in our majors, and that is partially due to that interest in veterinary medicine. We don't have as many young men that are interested in going into veterinary medicine. And oftentimes they will look at a biology or another major that may be more aligned with medical school or even dental school, something else. And so we just don't have as many of those students coming through. So given that the number of opportunities in veterinary medicine and application of vet school is are limited. We have to, you know, work on alternative things that students can do beyond that. And for some of our students that, you know, may come in without an interest in veterinary medicine, you know, the same sort of rules apply from my perspective. We have to think about places that we can encourage those students to explore so that they might have other things to sort of do with their degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that I've ever sat down and dug up exact numbers. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but do you have a ballpark estimate of the proportion of students that come in as freshmen on a pre-vet track, you know, regardless of what major they pick, what fraction of those end up actually making it into a vet school somewhere?
Yeah, I think it's going to be somewhat dependent on whether or not the institution is aligned with a college of vet medicine, either there is one at that institution or whether there is one in that state, because I think that the proportion would be a bit higher in those locations. The schools that don't have a college of vet medicine associated with them, I'm going to guess that those are going to be in that maybe, you know, of the students entering, if we say that 85% of them are interested in that track, maybe 10 to 15% end up on that track. So there's a big proportion of students that are going to have other interests. They're going to develop other opportunities, or it's just not going to work out that that's where they want to go. And, you know, oftentimes I'll have students come in and say, this is just not something that I want to do for another 4 years, or I don't see this as being sort of what I want to do after that for forever. And I've developed other interests. So they'll go a different direction.
I mean, a lot of people talk about organic chemistry derailing people, and that can happen. But yeah, I find just as often people find other interests. And I usually think about, you know, many of these students without any exposure to production ag at all are just completely unaware of the career opportunities, right? So they think, I like animals, I'm good at science, what's out there? A veterinarian, right?
Yeah, and I can tell you, if I count up, I think I've had 10, 12 PhD students. I know of at least two of them that either were accepted or were well on track to go to veterinary school and just decided that wasn't for them. They wanted to take a different route. So I think it can change dramatically. And the opportunities, I think once students are sort of enlightened to the other opportunities, they see things that are of greater interest.
So what about on the demand side, Jeff? The stereotype, I guess, is that livestock operations are, you know, only want to hire kids from farms and not really open to, you know, a different type of workforce. What do you see out there now? If somebody decides to sort of shift their path and they're going to get exposed to the knowledge basis, I guess, for production livestock sector, do you think they can find jobs or what are they ending up in?
Yeah, I would say that that is probably not correct. I think that we still have some people, even within academia, that think that, you know, I'm only going to send sort of kids with experience to livestock operations. But for the most part, we can't do that. That's kind of shooting ourselves in the foot. And so honestly, most of the students that I see going into those production sort of situations, either after vet school or after some more extensive training, are the ones who are really excited by it. And they're the ones who kind of jump in and really have an enthusiasm and a passion for it. So I think that for the most part, our producers are willing to work with people and train people if they've got that enthusiasm and that passion. But you know, the first thing that I also tell students is this is not a 9-to-5 job. I don't know that any jobs are 9-to-5 at this point, but this is something that, you know, it gives you a great amount of freedom, just like a faculty position. But there's also, you know, you're kind of on call a lot. So you have to understand that it's more than a career, it's a lifestyle.
A lot of times I think people think of, like, if you're going to work on a dairy farm, for example, they immediately go to thinking about milking cows, maybe feeding cows, cleaning barns, that sort of thing. When you see people leaving with a 4-year degree, what kind of roles are they taking on if they're directly involved in the livestock sector? Or is it more like the allied industry that's selling to farms?
Yeah, I would say that it's a combination. And a lot of times what I've noticed is you'll get students that kind of move into one of those allied industry positions. And a lot of those are even beyond selling at this point, right? They're typically going to have some element of technical service involved in them. And that can be, you know, students are coming out with a BS, less so, master's more, and then PhD, obviously, more extensive. But, you know, students may work at one of those positions. They may work in extension positions for a while. And then they move into a production setting, right? They'll get some experience, some expertise, and then they'll move into a production setting. So to a certain extent, they're not doing the sort of day-to-day operation, particularly, as you know, in our industry, in the dairy industry, right? We have a significant number of very large operations, and we have a lot of operations that have a number of large operations, and they need sort of good managers for those positions. And, you know, that's two things, right? In a management position where you're supervising, you're going to have some additional training experience and expertise to do that, because you're not just working for yourself. But the other one is that compensation sort of goes along with that, that you're going to be doing better that way. But also, I think, despite the fact that I said it's a lifestyle, it is, but there are opportunities so that you are not sort of wedded to a position 24/7, 365. So, you know, work hard, play hard, I think is one of the things that, that sort of comes to mind when I think about where people are going to be in those management positions, or even with a industry, allied industry position.
Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. Asepsis LLC is a Wisconsin-based animal wellness company focused on the development of state-of-the-art animal hygiene technologies. Our company's mission is to apply innovative hygiene solutions into animal agricultural and veterinary applications, improving the wellness of the animals with a focus on sustainability. We accomplish this through the continued enhancement of our chlorine dioxide-based technologies within a wide range of agricultural hygiene applications, from facility and animal hygiene to water treatment.
So you've seen this many times. You mentioned some grad students of yours that got sort of drawn to working with cattle. And you could, I'm sure, find examples in other livestock species. What do you think have been the sort of eye-opening experiences or the turning points that open people up to those different paths?
I'd say it starts with our curriculum, right? I think that students coming into, for example, a biology curriculum, you know, their base courses are not a lot different from what our students have. But what our students have is a pretty quick exposure to actual animals.
Yep.
Animals with a backbone. That, I think, excites them because, oh, gosh, this is what I came to do versus some other opportunities, some other majors that they may do. The other thing is I don't ever discount the ability to become involved in other activities outside the classroom. So our clubs, our teams, our other sorts of things, working on our production facilities at institutions that have farms, all of those, I think, are the kinds of things that can really get students excited and want to learn more and want to do more with that type of thing. So, yeah, I almost think that it's more likely that it's an outside of the classroom aha moment or exposure that gets students excited as much as it is inside the classroom.
Yeah, that's probably, I think, probably for anybody in teaching and advising, you know, watching kids find their passion and really get motivated is one of the most exciting things. And the nice thing in this space is, you know, there really are rewarding, fairly well-paying careers, right? If you work hard and you find that passion for it.
Yeah. And I would not, you know, the other thing I'd say is that the sort of opportunity to, like I said, lifestyle is very rewarding too. It's not the same sort of Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 sort of approach that I think more and more people are interested in. Certainly, you know, remote work, other things. You're not going to be able to do remote work in a production setting, but certainly a lot of our allied industry positions, you're not working remotely, but you're out. You're out and about and you're moving around and you're not sitting in an office. That's not, you know, the sort of common approach that folks are going to have.
Yep, absolutely. And then like for a subset of students that are, you know, really talented and interested in digging deep. I know, you know, we've had a lot of students in my group that have been on that border between, do they want to do a veterinary medicine, you know, doctorate, or do they want to go into more of a research master's and PhD path? How have you helped students through that decision process before?
One thing that I think we have going for us in the animal dairy sciences, but, you know, ag in general, is that we have a master's degree that is not a terminal degree. So in a lot of other academic disciplines, the master's degree is either a terminal degree or it's because you didn't sort of move on into a PhD program, something else. And so the opportunities are a little less limited. I think that the master's degree is pretty highly valued, particularly in our industries. So there's lots of opportunities with that. And it provides for sort of a time for students, if it's used correctly, to decide, where am I going to go? Is this really for me? Do I want to keep on with this kind of research and education side of things? Or do I want to, you know, move off into a different type of position that, you know, a master's degree is going to set me up for moving on to that? So I encourage students while they're in their master's program to think about that. Where do you want to end up? And do you need to continue on? Because PhD is a commitment. You know it as well as I do. And students sometimes go into it, I think, with unrealistic expectations about either the brevity of it, or you know, the one thing that I think, persistence is one of the traits that students have to be successful in a PhD, to be in an academic sort of position. The other one is you can't let rejection get you down, right? More often than not, you know, we put in grant proposals. 1 out of 10 get funded. That's pretty good. We put in papers. Hopefully not 1 out of 10 get, you know, you get accepted, but you know, you're going to have rejection from that. And so, you know, you have to get used to the fact that rejection is part of the process and part of what we do. And there are some folks that just don't deal with that very well and don't want that as sort of the one constant in an academic sort of career. And so they'll decide, I want to go a different route. The trade-off from my perspective is that, you know, that rejection gives us an enormous amount of freedom to develop a program and to develop a direction for what we want to do that you may not have as much of in an industry setting or something else.
I always say I never get bored in my job. That's the best part about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing I always try to drive home with people looking at a PhD is I always say you don't do it for a more lucrative career, because that's not enough motivation to get you through 9 months of writing a dissertation. You have to be intrinsically motivated to be learning.
That's exactly right. And you have to get, I mean, it sounds a little nerdy, but I'm sure you've had these times. I've had these times when you have some data that either coming off of an instrument, something else, and you can kind of tell where things have gone in terms of your experiment, or you've, you know, analyzed some production data, something else, and you kind of see, and wow, that's interesting. It fits my hypothesis, and I'm the first one to know this. And that has to get you excited. And if that doesn't get you excited, then maybe career in sort of science and investigation isn't really for you. If that's not the kind of thing that gets you turned on, then you know, you probably want to look at something else.
I want to think about one other population of students real quick. And I don't know if this was your situation growing up, but I certainly had a lot of peers in the situation where they grew up on a small farm. They loved agriculture, but their parents, and probably wisely, from years of beating their head against the wall of paying the bills, would be like, don't go into agriculture. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of a crushing thing to be told when that's, you know, all they live and breathe. Any thoughts for students like that on, you know, what they should think about?
Well, I guess that, you know, not exactly my situation, but certainly the long-term financial prospects for where the situation we were in, it was not great. But my parents encouraged me to get an education, because with that, you've got opportunities. But, you know, that said, I don't think necessarily that a BS or a university sort of degree is for everyone. And so there may be other opportunities for folks out there as well. So I don't want anyone to interpret this as me saying that everybody has to go to college, because I don't think they do. As a professor, that may be sacrilegious, but
I agree.
We haven't had you know, too few students coming through, at least the institutions I've been at. But to your point, I think that there is a significant opportunity and demand for students that have had those kind of production level experiences across the board. Doesn't matter what species it's with. We see, as I pointed out before, too few students coming into our majors that have exposure to and experience with livestock. And it is a, it's not that they can't get that while they're here. It's just that I think it gives students a leg up and an opportunity then to explore other options that, that maybe, you know, some of our students without that background haven't had. I would also say that, you know, they already know what the lifestyle is in an agricultural community. And one thing that I occasionally hear from students is, well, where would I be working? I mean, that seems to be a very sort of rural setting. I don't know that that's really what I want to do.
Yeah.
And our other, the other cohort that you're talking about may not want to either, but they know what that is and they may want that sort of opportunity. So I think that there is a significant need for those students to sort of, if they're interested in a undergrad degree, to certainly look at going into an ag major. You may not be, as we've already talked about, directly engaged in the production setting, but you may be in one of these affiliated sort of industries that we need that provide you with a lot of that exposure that probably you have some fond memories of and would like to continue.
And I think it's probably worth saying, certainly not everyone, but there are site managers and sort of second line leaders like that, that make six figures in,
absolutely,
in the dairy sector, right? And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And maybe you don't own the place yourself and there's trade-offs, but you can have a very rewarding career, I think, in the production ag still.
Yeah, and I think that there's plenty of examples of people that have started sort of as that kind of management and have worked with owners that have sort of developed their own capacity to manage and have been either supported to go into that or have worked in to a manage or to an ownership state, yep, and position. People sort of, for the most part, want to see their operations persist. They want an opportunity, and there's too few, I think, younger people coming up that have that interest in that and understand that that is something that they can possibly do as well.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
All right, Jeff, we're getting close to our half hour mark here. So I've got to ask you this tough one. So if you got a time machine for Christmas and you could travel back to talk to 18-year-old Jeff Dahl, are there one or two points you'd want to share with him?
I would say, you know, just remember to be open to possibilities and open to opportunities. I have had a significant sort of opportunity to see the world and interact with people from all kinds of cultures, see agriculture from sort of the very base sort of subsistence level all the way to modern systems that we might expect to see in the US or North America, Europe. It's given me an opportunity to just expand my horizons. And I think that that would be the first thing, right? Don't be afraid to take a step into a new opportunity. The other one would be that eventually, you know, you work hard and you kind of are persistent, you won't have anything to worry about from a lifestyle perspective. You're not going to be rich, but you probably can end up doing just fine. And I think that both of those are important to consider when you're sort of young. But you know, don't be afraid of new opportunities, I guess would be the primary one.
Excellent. Good advice for anybody out there starting college or in the middle of college or getting out of high school. All right. Well, Dr. Dahl, thanks again for joining us on the Dairy Podcast Show. Again, if you want to learn more from him on his work on heat stress in calves, that's episode 39. So you can scroll back and dig that one up. But thanks for joining us again.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks, Barry. Enjoyed the conversation.
So this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. Again, if you haven't subscribed, make sure you hit that button so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.